Los Fanboys, episode 38. Bienvenidos and welcome to Los Fanboys, the official movie and TV podcast of Latino Review Media, aka LRM Online. Welcome to our 38th edition of this wonderful and vibrant podcast. You're listening right now to the voice of Mario Francisco Robles, and I'm about to be joined by my two cohorts in crime. We're going to start with, I'm going to mix it up a little bit, Kelvin Chavez.
What's cracking, kids?
And Joseph Jamil Medina.
That was hardly mixing it up. You always introduce him first.
No, I don't. I always do Jammer first.
Oh, shit. Well, there you go.
God, you Coloradoans really do nothing but smoke pot. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
So. Go ahead, sorry.
You go ahead.
Okay, so before we get started in our normal stuff like box office and a fuck ton of trailers, we have so many trailers, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable the number of trailers that we have this week, but we have to talk about the question of the week, which appeared last week, and it came as a result of Doctor Strange. Really fucking confusing timeline that movie had, and there was kind of a, I wouldn't say, there was a spirited discussion between us as to when this movie takes place. I know Mario was convinced it took place over the course of, what, a couple months, I think you thought? And then to me, yeah, it took place over the course of several years. So what did you guys think? Mario, what do some of our listeners have to say about the timeline for Doctor Strange?
Well, first, I do want to say, first of all, thank you for everyone who, again, took the time to do this because, you know, we could talk about this shit for hours. You know, you don't have to do any work. You could just listen. So the fact that you actually want to chime in on the discussion is fucking awesome. So anyway, Twitter user Dan Barley said he actually wrote like a multi-part response. He said, I think Doctor Strange starts around Avengers Age of Ultron. The tower can be seen in the New York City skyline. Through to Civil War and after. He also has multiple surgeries to fix his hands, which would take a while to that's true, actually.
I said that.
Yeah, but I don't listen to you.
Okay.
So that is interesting. Multiple surgeries on the hands. That does imply that it took a long time. Fuck, why am I so slow? And apparently the mention in Winter Soldier was because he's a prominent surgeon, which made him noteworthy to Hydra. That's an interesting thing, too. I mean, I guess. And part four, he said, totally forgot the last part, but no, I don't think it's a massive plot hole, and I'm willing to forgive Marvel if it is. Then our frequent commenter, Aaron Varola, said Doctor Strange takes place over years. Sitwell says, threat to Hydra now or in the future. Okay. Deidre said that Doctor Strange movie begins around the time of Iron Man 2. Okay, I wish we can get like official confirmation on this shit, but okay.
Yeah.
Then Sancho Panda said plot hole, yes and no. Yes, I don't think his origin occurs before Civil War. No, he can still appear before using Eye of Agamotto. Wow, that would be some rather convoluted plot reworking there. But
so is he saying he can? What does he mean by that?
Like, in other words, it is post Civil War, but maybe using the Eye of Agamotto, he went back in time at one point, and that's how he ended up on Hydra's radar.
Oh well, that's a stretch.
Yeah. And then Sean, another frequent commenter and listener, said that he's convinced it was Rhodey they were talking about in that now infamous scene in Doctor Strange. Why mention an air colonel paralyzed in a mech suit if it's not him? But then he says mentioning Strange in Civil War isn't a plot hole. They were targeting thousands. Couldn't have all had powers.
I think he meant Winter Soldier, not Civil War.
In Winter Soldier, yeah. So I guess he's just trying to say, since Hydra was targeting thousands, that Strange was on their list, but not necessarily for being some sort of superhero. So it's not a plot hole. So his is also sort of like a yes. It takes place mainly after Civil War, but no, that doesn't make the Winter Soldier thing, the reference, a plot hole.
I recently read a theory that the film could take place starting around Civil War and ending in like 2023 or 24 or something.
What the fuck is wrong with you people? Jesus Christ. And while we're on this sort of reader interactive portion of today's program, we also have to acknowledge that we got another iTunes review.
Hey!
Another five-star iTunes review. The name of the title of the review is amazing. And considering the person's username is Tavo PR, I assume this is Mr. Tavo Borrego, who has tweeted at us many a time. So thank you, Tavo, for taking the time. But I also have to yell at you. Not really.
Why is that? Tell us.
Because he didn't show me any love. I think he meant to. But here's what he said. As a Latino, I am very proud of what Kelvin, Jammer, and Medina bring to the table every week. Keep it up, guys. Éxito total. Tavo, do you realize that Jammer and Medina are both the same person?
That's okay. Let the man speak. Let him be happy about it.
Last week, they call you a puss, and this week, they say you count as two people, and I don't matter. I don't understand you people.
I think you also missed a really big part, is that he said this podcast has a lot of heart. Or has lots of heart.
Right, that's right. The first part is the podcast has a lot of heart. I love Kelvin's catchphrase.
Da-dum-dum.
The old musical theater person in me is like, you gotta have heart. Sorry, that's from Damn Yankees. And my voice is still shot, so don't quote, you know, don't judge my singing. Anyway, so everyone who took the time to write reviews and respond to our question of the week, thank you so very much. And now, shall we dive into a look at this week's news?
I guess if you want to. We could just talk about some box office stuff. Doctor Strange unsurprisingly held on to the number one spot domestically, making around $43 million, which is actually very impressive. I believe it made around $85 million last time, which means, if I'm not mistaken in my mathematics, that that's a less than 50% drop, which is pretty fucking impressive. Like, just look at – most of them tend to fall like 50-plus. And I know that Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman dropped at like 67 or 69% respectively. So, I mean, we know that Doctor Strange didn't have an amazing first weekend. It was like around 85, and, you know, it's good for the movie, but
hey, for a solo debut for an obscure character, that was fucking solid, man.
That's true, but, you know, when you compare it to like the other bigger properties, it seems a little underwhelming, but it's not. Like it holds up. It's holding up pretty well. I think the positive reviews have a lot to say about that. So that's all kinds of awesome, and I think it's well deserved because it was a pretty solid movie. It wasn't the best thing in the world, but I thought it was very solid.
Absolutely.
In number two, we have Trolls, the new animated film Trolls, which is also, I believe, in its second week, and also holding on really well. It only dropped 24.9% in its second weekend. That is ridiculous, and I think it's deserving. On the heels of the election, my fiance and I were really depressed, so we went to go watch Trolls, and it was silly and dumb and overly happy, but it was fun. Like, I could see why people enjoyed themselves at the theater. I think it was a lot better than a lot of people expected it to be. So,
and it helped that it was a Veterans Day too. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people didn't have school or work on Friday, so they were able to hit those multiplexes bright and early, which definitely contributed to that weekend.
Yeah. And then we have Arrival at number three. I wouldn't call this disappointing, but, you know, it's definitely a lower performing film.
Actually, I kind of got to gotta check you right there, Jammer.
Well, I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. No, motherfucker.
You already started on the wrong foot.
No. Let me just say this. It seems disappointing just because we're used to these bigger performing things. But at the end of the day, this is a relatively low budget film. And given how smart it's being kind of approached, this is actually a pretty decent performance, and it will definitely, you know, if it keeps this up, make money at the end of the day.
I'm still going to check your
ass. All right.
Do you know what the industry projections were for Arrival's opening weekend?
I do not. What were they?
$15 million.
Oh, wow.
So this thing actually beat it by $9 million. That is no small feat. So what I'm going to say is, not only is it not disappointing, if you're someone who's been like, if you're a bean counter who's been paying attention to this sort of shit, Arrival way overperformed what people thought. So that's very, very good. 24 for a modest, you know, a relatively modestly budgeted sci-fi, you know, First Contact movie that has ridiculous reviews, this thing is probably going to do very well. It's probably going to have nice legs. And like I said, 24 far surpasses the $15 million expectations. So if you're Paramount right now, you are very happy with what Arrival pulled off last weekend.
You don't know them.
I'm very happy.
Oh, I do.
All right. Number four, we have Almost Christmas. That's the, was it? The, who directed that? I forgot who directed that, but that's sort of like the African-American focused film for the holiday.
And, I didn't even hear that.
I heard it was pretty solid. I heard it wasn't bad. And a lot of people who seem to be going to it seem to be having a good time. And, you know, these types of movies tend to be do very well. You know, they have a very specific demo that always comes out to the theater, you know, kind of like the Tyler Perry type of group of people. And this movie had a $17 million budget, so it's making that back for sure, especially since it hasn't even hit the holiday season yet. So I'm wondering if this is going to last pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, Hacksaw Ridge, with $10.8 million. I saw the movie. I thought it was pretty good. It was a little paint by numbers, for sure. But at the end of the day, it still was competent directing, and it kind of got its point across. Like, it wasn't spectacular, and I do not think Andrew Garfield deserves Oscar. But, you know, I thought it was pretty solid. And I don't know if this movie was being projected for very high, but it's, you know... I think it's did okay. What do you guys think? Any extra thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I kind of predicted that Hacksaw Ridge was going to have a very modest drop because I, you know, just based on the positive buzz.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, the drop was only 29%.
Yeah.
That's very good.
That is pretty good overall.
And when you consider the fact that it's got the strong reviews, it's got a former Spider-Man on the poster. I think it actually could conceivably, you know, continue to have pretty strong legs for the remainder of the winter. And I actually kind of want to circle back for a second, though, because there is an interesting sort of thing to keep track of with Arrival, which is the fact that, and this surprised me, we know it's a critical darling. For the longest time, it had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Everyone was saying, oh, my God, instant classic, all this sort of shit, right? But the cinema score is surprisingly mediocre. The film received a B cinema score from opening day audiences. And that's very interesting because, remember, we've discussed this before, that, like, a B doesn't sound that bad by, like, our typical standards. When you're reviewing a movie, if it's an A or a B, you know, it's great or good. But a B is not considered a crappy score. But for industry analysts and for the industry at large, a lot of times – a B cinema score doesn't bode well for a movie. That counts as, like, extremely so-so. It's like a different scale than we're used to. So with a cinema score of B, that could actually hinder Arrival's future prospects. I know I was just raving about how it overperformed, but that is something to keep track of. Yes, more people than expected saw it, but if those same people now go around and go, meh, then that could chop off the legs it's going to get. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow.
I feel like maybe people are going into it expecting something more along the lines of Independence Day, even though the trailers don't indicate that at all.
Yeah.
I think they're maybe expecting more action and they're not getting it.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe that could contribute to it. I know my brother-in-law, he was like, yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting. I was going to ask him what he was expecting, but I got lazy and did not do so. So I'll report back to you on what he says for that, because I'm curious to what sort of the layman is expecting from a movie like that.
And it's funny that you said it, because Hacksaw Ridge, the one that you're talking about right now, got an A on the side.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and it's almost the same, people are
critic-wise
is the same as Arrival.
Yeah, so like fans and critics are on the same page when it comes to Hacksaw Ridge. Fans and critics are not necessarily eye to eye when it comes to Arrival. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to drop.
I did say that last week. That is, if you like Interstellar or something like that, if you don't like Interstellar, you'll like the film. If you don't, I knew that was going to happen to that.
Well, I think also something to say with Hacksaw Ridge, like kind of going along, expanding on what I said, is that Hacksaw Ridge delivers very much on what I think anyone could possibly expect that movie to be. Yeah. Like, it's definitely, like, the standard, typical war film. The structure's the same. The characters are similar. It's got some cheeseball moments regarding the romance and, you know, the heroic moments regarding the character. It literally hits – it's like a checklist, and it hits all of them one by one. So if you're, like, inclined to see a war movie like Hacksaw Ridge, you're probably inclined to like it. So I can see why that would result in that getting an A by audiences as opposed to Arrival, which is a little bit, I'd say, less predictable.
Yeah. All right.
All right, that's all I have to say about that. I think
about everything I have to say on the box office situation.
Well, for the longest time, there's sort of been this clash, not really clash, something between Marvel Entertainment, or Marvel Television rather, and Marvel Studios. And if you remember back when Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe was announced, near the tail end of the slate was the Inhumans movie. And recently, a few months back, it was pulled off the schedule, and Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige basically said, hey, I think it's going to come back, I just don't know when. And there's also been, it seems like bad blood between them and Marvel TV, because Marvel TV has to acknowledge the Marvel movies, and the Marvel movies couldn't really give a fuck about the Marvel TV stuff, even when they're producing such great stuff as, you know, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Daredevil and all that stuff. And it seems like the divide becomes increasingly... you know, increasing each and every freaking day. And the Inhumans are introduced in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so going from TV to movie seemed like a weird thing, especially when there seems to be this increasing divide. So would it be possible that we'd ever get an Inhumans movie? It seemed like maybe, but somewhere down the line. But now,
it
recently...
It wasn't on Marvel's slate, I should mention that.
I did, I mentioned that. And it was pulled off. And so recently, Marvel Television... they announced that they agreed to exclusively premiere the new ABC series, Marvel's The Inhumans, in IMAX commercial theaters, marking the first time a live-action TV series has debuted in this manner. So, it's pretty much official. The Inhumans is not going to be a movie, and it's going to be a series, which I think it's a bit more fitting because of the fact that they're introduced in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., another ABC series. Mario, what do you think about this?
Well, let me just ask in case I missed something. Does this officially mean that they're not going to be part of the cinematic, you know, universe, or is this all still one, you know, one cohesive place?
This is all still one cohesive place as far as we know, but it's not going to be, the Inhumans is not going to be a movie.
Okay.
Wait, let me rephrase that. That has not been confirmed that it's not going to be a movie, but the fact that it's a TV show seems to imply that it will not be a movie. That being said, it has not been stated whether or not this is still part of the same universe. We have every right to assume that it is still a part of the same universe.
Okay, so I have to admit I've been a little bit on the periphery of all this stuff, because for me, when it comes to like the Marvel shows that are on ABC, I don't really follow them that closely. I didn't watch Peggy Carter. I've never seen an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So whenever it comes to anything coming out of that corner of the MCU, I tend to be a little hazy. So I had heard, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, the way people were talking about it, it was like the Inhumans wasn't going to be attached to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the movies. Is that incorrect? Are these going to be the same Inhumans that were introduced in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
If they were
yeah,
the same.
I mean, that would
make
sense to me, yeah.
If they were
okay,
the same.
Okay, so
or,
I just want to
hold
make
on,
sure
hold on a second.
It's not cut off.
If they were the same or if they were different, are you assuming they're the same or different?
I'm assuming that it's going to have to be the same if it's on the same network and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. already introduced them. Okay, good. So then that's just – then because somebody confused me about that. A friend of mine who also writes commented on like what a bizarre decision this was, because it seems like it's not going to be related to the movies or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If that's not the case, then I don't really hate this idea. I mean, if they think there's an audience for it, if they've already put down the groundwork for the Inhumans and they think they can make it work, then fucking go for it. I have no real personal investment one way or the other, because like I said, anything on Channel 7, anything on any network TV really, doesn't Marvel, DC, sitcom, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't really watch any network TV.
Now look at
so
you.
I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to that stuff. I wait until those shows have run for like two or three seasons, and then I watch them on Netflix or Amazon. Because I always feel like on those networks, shows get way too short of a leash. So I might be really into a show, and then it gets cut within a season, and then I'm pissed off and I got blue balls. So yeah, so I don't watch any network shows. But hey, if you know, if they think they have an audience for it, if people are responding to the Inhumans based on what they've introduced in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then fucking have at it. Have fun. I don't, you know, I don't care.
Kelvin?
That's that whole thing. I believe that's that whole feud with Kevin Feige and Ike.
Perlmutter.
Can we talk about something? Is it a bit disturbing to anybody else that the only picture anyone has of Ike Perlmutter is like 30 years old?
Yeah, he's like a shadow. At
Steve, what's his name? The guy from I forgot that show.
That's great. Thanks. you just added a lot to this conversation, Kevin.
I know.
Wait, what are you talking about, though?
No, that his picture, the one that you were talking about, he looks like Steve Carell or something like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, he kind of does. I can see it, but it's always weird to me.
I think that's that feud still between Feige and Perlmutter. You know,
yeah,
that's what happens when that happened. I was like, you know, that has, you know, back in the days, I don't know how long ago that was. You know, he is the guy who runs, I believe, the TV and comics, right? Or no, Perlmutter.
Perlmutter, yeah, he runs Marvel Entertainment as a whole, and Marvel Studios, who makes the film, used to be underneath his umbrella, but that's since sort of been pulled out and sort of placed under Disney proper, so it's kind of its own entity right now. But he has control over everything else.
So you know he was pissed off about that, and he is, you know, Brian Michael Bendis is the guy, I guess, who created S.H.I.E.L.D., and he's under Ike, so, you know.
But yeah, same with Jessica Jones. I think he also Jessica Jones as well.
All that stuff. So he's the head of that stuff, you know. So he has all these people, his chums on his side. And I remember a while back, they were saying that Perlmutter was responsible for not having a female Marvel movie, you know, female Iron Man 3 villain, the cancellation of X-Men and Fantastic Four comics due to the feud with Fox Studios, and so on and so on. So, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't surprise me that they went this route.
Yeah, not at all. Like it seemed weird that Inhumans was still on the slate, and when they pulled it, I was just like, okay, well, that's the end of that. I don't know what's going to happen with that property, but I'd be surprised if it was actually still a movie. And lo and behold, it's a TV series now, and I think it's a good fit. And yeah, I'm along with Mario. Like, I don't really watch the network stuff for ABC or for Marvel stuff. Like, the Netflix, I've been getting back into Luke Cage. I'm finishing it up. Holy fuck, that is a great show. So is. Marvel is still doing really great stuff from TV. It's just Netflix front for me. But I only got it set, like, however many episodes. I watched, like, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I didn't care for it. I didn't watch any of Agent Carter. And we'll see if I get into this. I'm not really sure if I'm going to be up for it. But, yeah, I tend to appreciate the less networky type stuff these days.
Yeah, I mean, I only watched 2 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season with Ghost Rider, and that was it. You know, no interest. Never saw Agent Carter.
So. Yeah. So I guess we're not really the most qualified to talk on this. But, you know, we'll see how the show turns out. Maybe it'll be great. They've shown that they can actually do good TV shows, so we'll see. We shall see.
I mean, he's one of the reasons, Perlmutter is one of the reasons why there is no Iron Man 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, explain.
I mean, that's what, this is going back to when Iron Man 3 came out. That's what I was, there's a lot of conflicts, you know, like, how can you say, bochinche style, you can say, you know, there's a lot of bullshit going on between him and how his vision compared to Feige's vision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'd want to look into that because I didn't realize he had any real say,
like, in other
or
words,
force in that race.
You know, he wouldn't have, if Perlmutter was still in Marvel Studio, he wouldn't have the Russo brothers directing any of that stuff. You know, that's one of the reasons why Josh Whedon left Marvel following Avengers 2.
Was why? You
know? Because of that, because there were the feud between the.
Oh, because of the feud between the two. That's why he left. It wasn't because he didn't like the Russo brothers. It was because the feud.
No. It's not because of that.
Okay, cool. Well, interesting stuff. Anyone else have any last things to say about the Inhumans?
I think these last 7 minutes we've dedicated to the Inhumans are the most I've ever thought about those things. So, and I'm fine keeping it that way. Let's move on from the Inhumans.
Inhumans.
Moving on from the Inhumans.
Thank you.
Well, Jesus. All right. You know what? I'm going to switch up the schedule a bit just to fuck with you. And to stay in Marvel, into Marvel territory. Because
you're such a Marvel fanboy.
I know. And anyways, Ryan Reynolds, he actually finally spoke on the whole Deadpool 2 situation, just for those who are unfamiliar for some reason. Deadpool 2 recently had its director hop out, director Tim Miller, and there's been a lot of speculation, especially from Mario, as, you know, fuck Ryan Reynolds, because Ryan Reynolds doesn't have a good movie in his bone, and yeah, fuck him. And Deadpool 2, it's been kind of a big question mark. Is it going to happen? Of course it's going to happen. But who's going to be the guy behind the camera? We don't know. But finally, Ryan Reynolds comes out and speaks about Deadpool 2 and about his feud, if you want to call it that, with director Tim Miller, in that maybe the creation of the original Deadpool film wasn't as peaceful and harmonious as we first thought. Mario, since you're the one who wrote this article up, do you want to speak on this at all?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's interesting because he basically confirms that Tim Miller's, you know, test footage was a big thing that got them the green light. And he confirms that, you know, that the collaboration between he and Miller and Reese and Wernick was a huge part of what made that first movie so special. And then he still, you know, ultimately we know that Miller's gone. So it's just, you know, it still makes the whole situation a sort of tough pill to swallow. I don't know if you want me to get into the specific quotes, but basically, you know, he talks about the fact that he was trying to get this movie made for about 11 years. And he had been working with a script with Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick for a while. And that they were making all these kinds of tweaks and doing everything they can to try to get Fox to do it. And Fox just was not budging. And then they saw the test footage and they saw the response that overtook the whole internet. And that's what got them the green light. So he basically explained that. And then he explained just in general that the process of making the movie was very difficult because you had all these very passionate, very opinionated people, and that there were lots of fights in post-production and all this sort of stuff. But ultimately, what came out was a fucking phenomenal movie. So, you know, again, he admits all this stuff. He acknowledges what an integral part of it Tim Miller was. But ultimately, you know, he also sort of put, you know, there's something he said in there about the fact that he feels like he's an authority on the character, that he understands the character and the tone. And they just, you know, he wants someone who's going to focus on the visuals, which is something else that I've mentioned in the past. Like, that seems to be what he wants. He wants him and the writers to focus on the humor and the character and the tone. And they want a guy who's just going to make shit look really cool. So, you know, it basically confirms everything that I was saying in my letter to him. And to me, it just adds up to this whole thing about, again, how unfortunate it is that despite how much he acknowledges that the collaboration was vital, he is not going to be collaborating with Miller and Miller's off the project.
All right. So do you feel any good about this at all? Or are you still kind of like, eh? Or do you think he needs to stop exerting his power? Or what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I feel like, you know, at this point, I guess I'm just going to go with wait and see. Because at the end of the day, I do love what he did with Deadpool. I do think he understands the character. And as I said, when the film came out 7 months ago, whatever it was, 8 months ago, I think this is like a perfect marriage of character and actor. I think Reynolds and Deadpool were made for each other. So ultimately, I still have excitement for that, and I still want to see more of that. I just really hope Deadpool 2 doesn't suck, because if it ends up sucking, everyone's going to look at this moment here where Ryan flexed and Miller left, and everyone's going to go, well, then maybe that's where shit went wrong. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to take a wait and see approach. I'm looking forward to Deadpool 2. I'm looking forward to more Ryan Reynolds as Wade Wilson. But I just, we're going to, that sequel better be fucking dynamite now, because the all eyes are on him now.
Kelvin, what are your big thoughts?
Time. No, all eyes are on him big time. And I've said that before. I think that, you know, Tim Miller leaving to me was like a sort of a blow, because he was the visual for it, and he knew what you know, he knew what you wanted to see, you know, the opening scene, blah, blah, blah. But I just think that it all boils down to how good of a story it's going to be, regardless of, I guess, whoever takes the helm.
Absolutely, know? Yeah. I mean,
and I just think you can't discount him. I'm sorry, Alan, I'll let you talk in a second, but I just feel like you can't discount what Miller brought visually.
No, never.
Because a lot of what they wanted, you know, like on the page is one thing, but to actually translate it onto the screen is not, yeah, the visual, you know, it's not so hard. Awesome. Yeah. And he really, you know, he nailed took it. Their ideas and fucking killed it. So, you know, it's just, you know, he pulled off like that, you know, those opening credits. Yes.
Were dope.
The text on the screen was very funny, but the visuals that built up to all that was what, you know, it's the combination that made that opening sequence one of the coolest fucking things I've ever seen in a movie theater.
Yeah.
So I just feel like you really can't discount what Miller brought to the table here. And I hope that they're not taking that lightly.
Yeah, hopefully not. But it also, by the same token, you can't discount what Reynolds brought to the table for the character, for the writers, bringing them on set to make sure they're there to do on set, you know, changes to the script. All those important things. He really spearheaded this. And at the end of the day, it's like, we can't necessarily, just because Tim Miller brought a lot, we can't discount what Ryan Reynolds brought to it. And I don't think painting him as sort of like, you know, the bad guy who shouldered out this guy is necessarily the right narrative to push in this instance. We really don't know what happened. It seemed like, yes, he did, as you said, flex a bit, but we don't know the specifics as to why they actually disagreed with one another, and he could be in the right for all we know. So it is, yeah, kind of like the wait and see approach. We will have to wait and see how this pans out before we can actually start judging as much as we'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
Any last words about Deadpool?
No.
Okay, so back in 2011, the American adaptation for The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo came out, directed by David Fincher and starring Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara as Lisbeth Salander. And it was a great movie. Unfortunately, it didn't really do that well. Like, it made $230 million-plus on a budget of $90 million. And when you take everything into account, it probably resulted in a loss of like around $25 million when you include marketing and all that. It just wasn't – I think it was being advertised as like the feel-bad Christmas movie or movie of the holiday season or something, almost jokingly. But I think when it comes down to it, people don't really want to see a depressing movie around Christmas, and I think that's kind of what happened there. Personally, that's what I think happened. I think it could have done much better if it was given an early release. But as a result, the movie really wasn't rushed to, you know, get a sequel. And Rooney Mara has kind of been like, yeah, I'm up for the sequel. I'm up for it. And then a couple months back, she pretty much said, I am still up for it, but I don't think it's going to happen. Sometime later, I think literally within a couple weeks, it was rumored that they'd be making a adaptation of The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is the fourth book in the series, written by David Lagercrantz, or Lagercrantz, who basically picked up the baton from the now-deceased author Stieg Larsson, and the original trilogy was published posthumously after his death, after his heart attack in 2004. So obviously he couldn't write any more books. And they're going to be adapting that film instead of the other two, like books 2 and 3, which, you know, it's an interesting approach, but I can understand why they're doing it. They're treading new territory. The Swedish versions have already been made, you know, even though they weren't that well-received. And I see why this is happening, but it's pretty much been confirmed that that is the case in an interview with Stephen Knight, as well as a one-on-one interview that our very own Kelvin Chavez had with the director, Fede Alvarez. So, Kelvin, what did Mr. Alvarez say about this upcoming film of his?
Well, I spoke to him yesterday, actually. We had a phone conversation, and the interview will be up later on today. But he and I spoke about, I told him a quick update on The Girl with the Spider. He said that's what actually they were working on right now. They were excited about it. They were working with the story themselves. It is the fourth book in the series. They have to decide if the book and the movie are similar in style. He was saying something like that. They are having conversations because, you know, if you don't know Fede Alvarez, he likes to do his own sort of stuff. So I guess they have to meet eye to eye on the author of the book and him to see, you know, they need to honor, obviously, the book.
Yeah, this is probably going to be his first book adaptation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he also has a lot of input in it. You know, he wants to, obviously, you know, you can never make the movie, you know, the book can never be made exactly like the, in other words, a movie can never be exactly made like the book. So they have to do a lot of changes. And I asked him about the pressure of him having that, you know, and he said it was difficult, you know, because there's not enough room and stuff like that. But he did confirm that that's what they're working on next.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't read that book. I read.
And neither have I. I didn't even know it was a fourth book. I mean, I've seen all the films and not the, you know, obviously the.
Yeah, the Swedish ones? Or
the Swedish one, which are really good.
Mm-hmm. Was it Swedish?
Yeah, it was Swedish.
Okay.
But I never really was into this, The Girl in the Spider's Web.
Yeah, I read the first three books, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Played with Fire, and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Those were all great. I did not pick up this fourth book. I don't know why. I just didn't have time, didn't get around to it. But I'll definitely be checking that out in the coming months to see, you know, the differences in style. Because I know he took a very different approach to the characters and to sort of the style of the book than the other author. Because I know the other author was like very much like heavy journalism stuff, and that this author didn't focus as much on that stuff, for better or worse. And I know this one was probably the least well-received of the books. But, you know, I can't really say much because I haven't read it myself. But I'm excited to see what happens. Fede Alvarez is a really good director. Steven Knight, who's writing it, he's all right. I forget which other – Burnt, that one Bradley Cooper movie, he wrote that. It was all right. Wasn't that great? But I have faith, you know, given the right circumstances, that they can make something pretty cool. And I'm hoping that Rooney Mara and Daniel Craig come back to reprise their roles. Mario, any thoughts?
Honestly, I'm sort of not, you know, I'm not really much of anyone to comment. I didn't read the books. I didn't see any version of any movie having to do with this project or with this property. So I'm just sort of a total outsider when it comes to this Dragon Tattoo, Lisbeth Salamander, whatever her name is, thing. So, I mean, I like Fede Alvarez. So that's pretty cool. And if he does manage to get the if Fincher's cast back, that would be pretty badass for him. But I can't say I have much of an opinion one way or the other.
Kelvin, did he talk about the cast at all?
No, he couldn't. He couldn't comment on it. Yeah, I said, you know, are they coming back? Because I can't say just yet. You know,
what would you think about that? Would you be heartbroken if neither of the characters or the actors came back from the David Fincher one?
I wouldn't mind. I mean, I would like to see them come back, obviously, for sure. But if they don't come back, then I don't know how it will be received then.
Yeah.
Depends on who they cast, too. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. I mean, she absolutely nailed that role of like this sort of antisocial genius who doesn't know how to, you know, communicate with people, doesn't really give a fuck about a lot of people, and is really awkward. I've been rewatching that movie over and over again as I'm doing stuff, and man, she nails it. Like, she nails it. It's really impressive. I think she performs better than what's her name from the original, personally. Naomi Rapace.
Yeah, Naomi.
Yeah, she's good, but I think Rooney Mara was a bit better. That might also be because I speak the language that it's in, so maybe I can't even talk. But from what I saw, I appreciate it a bit more.
Yeah, I just want to see what Freddie does with this. I mean, I never read the book, and like I was saying, like he was saying yesterday, is he wants to, you know, keep it as much to the book as possible. But then again, he wants to change it as well.
And
at the same time, honor the spirit of the story is what he was saying.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on from that, we got.
Hey, I want to cut in with something. I need 30 seconds just to mock something.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, okay.
Earlier today, news broke that there's going to be another fucking Green Hornet movie. Did you guys hear about this?
I did not hear about this.
I saw it on the
Green Hornet. Oh my God! Why? What the fuck is wrong with people? Jesus, Seth Rogen tried it like what, 15 minutes ago, and it didn't work. And now fucking Paramount just got the film rights to the Green Hornet. They've got Gavin O'Connor, the director of
It was a deadline thing.
Warrior, right? Yeah, to go, and he's going to direct it. But really, apparently he wants to make a badass Green Hornet. How about make no Green Hornet? Just don't do it. This sounds fucking ridiculous.
Wow, look at you, sorry. Captain.
So what were you going on next? No, I just, like, come on. Like, listen, I'm the first person to defend Hollywood when they go, why are they always remaking the same shit? I always go, well, listen, it's not necessarily about remaking the same shit. It's about, hey, these movies cost a lot of money. So if you can make something based on a property that already has an installed fan base, then that all instantly gives you some money to work with. So that's why they look for properties that have installed fan bases. But how big of a fucking fan base does Green Hornet have at this point? You fucking idiots.
All right.
Anyway,
moving on from that, Ghost in the Shell got a new or I guess a trailer. It's labeled as a teaser trailer.
A nipple-free trailer.
And then it had an what's it called? IGN recorded, like, I guess, a special screening of the opening sequence that will be familiar to many fans of the anime. It's like the quote-unquote shelling sequence of when they're making the robot or the android Major. And they set it to the music that was used in the original as well. So, some big drops on those, some nice visuals. Mario, what did you think of these Ghosts in the Shell videos, I guess, trailer and
this scene? Is another one where, like, in general, I'm on the periphery because I didn't see the original thing. I didn't read the original stuff. I don't really have a dog in the race. So when I saw the trailer, I saw it completely as an outsider, just like, oh, what is this about? Mm-hmm. And just based on that, I mean, I liked what I saw. It looked interesting. It looked like a trip I would be into taking. So, you know, in terms of them trying to hook in new viewers, they definitely hooked me. I'm actually more curious what someone like you thought of it, since you actually know about this shit. Like, did it speak to you as a fan? Because for me as an outsider, thumbs up, I'm going to keep an eye out for this. If the reviews are good, count me in. But how about for you as someone who's actually invested in that world?
Well,
I'm with Mario here. I feel the same way, but now to you, Jammer.
Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I really don't care too much about Ghosts in the Shell. There's many different pieces of source material to pull from. You have the original manga by Shiro Masamune. You have the films, actually. There's two of them. There may be three. I think there's maybe three. And then there's, like, a couple different series as well. So there's a lot of material, and the one that a lot of people think of that kind of slightly punctures mainstream is that movie from 1995, the animated movie from 1995, and I never liked it. It's very dry. I actually rewatched it a couple days ago just to see, hey, maybe now that I'm not in high school, I'll appreciate it more. I watched it, still don't appreciate it. I get some of why. I think this is sort of like Akira, where it was more that in that time period in the 90s, when animation was largely in America perceived as a kid's thing, when something from overseas hits and it's clearly aimed towards an older crowd, it's all of a sudden a big deal. It's a very dry science fiction. The movie itself is really short. It's 80 minutes long. Very short movie, and there is little to no character development. It's pretty much hits the ground running, action stuff, but there's nothing – you're not really invested in the character much. They have some kind of empty conversations about the nature of humanity, because that's sort of the big thing is if you can manufacture feelings or you can manufacture memories, does it really matter if you're human or not? Those type of ideas, which are really cool, but in the context of a movie with almost no actual soul to it it really doesn't have an effect on me. So that being said, I understand the visuals are very iconic. The animation is very nice. And, you know, I understand why people really connect with it on a certain level, but I don't think it's the classic that everyone makes it out to be. Going into it from that perspective, and once again, this is me just having watched that one movie. I never watched the sequel. I never read the manga. I never watched the other series, so they may delve into that stuff later on for all I know, but it just felt very dry to me always. And this one feels a lot better because it seems like they're going to be exploring Major's, not necessarily backstory, but more her perspective on things, her insecurities as a machine, and her how unsure she is about the life around her. It feels like they're giving it more weight, more emotional weight, giving me a reason to actually care about what's going on that I think was completely lost in that original movie. So for me, I think they went above and beyond. I know a lot of people are pissed off because, you know, it's not exactly like the other movie, but I think they did a pretty good job. And, you know, I think
what about
this could be great.
The controversy
regarding the casting.
Yeah.
It's weird,
it didn't mean much, but you watching it, did you feel like, oh no, this is wrong?
I didn't feel, oh no, this is wrong. I've already accepted it. That being said, I do think it's a bit weird that they actually set it also in, you know, a very Japanese looking place. I can't really say, I don't really look specifically, but it looked like a very Asian setting.
Yeah.
And still they had, you know, Scarlett Johansson in the lead role. So in that sense, it's kind of weird. If they had actually,
so you think they should have switched the setting along with the casting?
Maybe. I mean, it's hard because then you whitewash the entire thing. But now it's a little bit weird because you put this white girl at the center of everything that's Asian looking. So it's kind of a, you really couldn't win unless you actually went for a, you know, a Japanese lead, and then you run the risk of not making a lot of money because no one knows who anyone is in the movie. So, yeah, you know, it really is a no-win situation for everybody. So I get why they did it. I don't necessarily think it's a good thing, but we're here. And if you had to cast white, I think you could do much worse than Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's where I stand on it.
And you know who does win? You said it's a no-win, but who definitely wins are fans of nippleless nudity.
Yeah, that is something that's very prevalent in anime is nippleless nudity. Where it's just
if you like nudity
outlines.
But you don't like nipples, this movie's going to be amazing for you.
What did you think of the trailer, Kelvin?
No, I like Mario said, I never followed anything about this stuff. Mm-hmm. It did intrigue me. Let's see what happens later on, you know.
Yeah, if the reviews are good, I think Kelvin and I will be there together sharing a bucket of popcorn.
This looks like it's
kind of, it reminded me of Westworld in a way sometimes.
It kind
of
reminds
me, I'm watching it.
It kind of reminds me of Blade Runner as well.
Yeah, I got a Blade Runner vibe. I even got sort of like a, maybe I just have Luc Besson on the mind, but I was thinking even like a Fifth Element vibe a little bit too.
No, that's so true. I could definitely see that. It's weird because if I look at Blade Runner, it looks like sets, but at the same time, there's sort of a real realism to it. This one feels more artificial. I can't really say what it is. Something about it feels plastic and artificial, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just sort of an interesting aesthetic choice I think they decided to go with. I'm wondering how it'll play out in context of the actual story. That being said, one last thing I want to say. People were wondering about the Puppet Master. In the movie, the Puppet Master is sort of the villain. It's like this – I'm going to fuck this up. But it's basically this AI that is invading people's memories and controlling them and stuff. And people seem to think that, oh, this doesn't look like he's going to be the main villain. I disagree. It kind of does look like he's going to be the main villain, or it is going to be the main villain as well, based on the fact that we had that – iconic invisible scene in the shallow waters where she's fighting that guy. So I think they are going to have that in there, which is good news. But it looks like the main story may not just be the Puppet Master is a bad guy, but it'll revolve around the Major's past. So I think that it's way more interesting than what we had with the original film, which solely focused on the Puppet Master.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's all I have to say. I'm done.
Okay.
So moving on from there, was keeping along the same lines, I guess, to, as far as you said, Luc Besson, he has a new movie coming out next year. It's called Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets, and they recently had a trailer drop, and it was very pretty, very shiny, very effects heavy, and I thought it was pretty cool. Like, I could understand people who still aren't sold on it because there was virtually no plot, but as far as visual and spectacle go, I was kind of taken with the look of it. I mean,
to me, it looked like that one looked like the Fifth Element.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a more up to date Fifth Element, obviously. Because I feel like when I think of Fifth Element, I think mostly of matte paintings. Because that's the whole background was a lot of times. Yeah. And these are just like CG backgrounds and everything.
CG backgrounds. And the opening sequence was what I was like, wow, Fifth Element style.
Mario.
I don't know, man. Like, it seemed to be like lacking personality. To me, it felt just a little generic, a little derivative, a little bit like I can be like, oh, that reminds me of this movie. Oh, that reminds me of that movie. Oh, that reminds me of this. Like, it seems like just kind of like a mishmash of shit we've seen already without like an overlying or an underlying personality that holds it all together and makes you want to go on that trip. So I think I'm going to have to sit this one out and wait for the next trailer that'll probably be a little more story heavy, because this one just didn't really do much for me. You know, like, yeah, it looks ambitious. It looks pretty cool, I guess. But nothing about it was like, all right, I have to go see this. To me, it lacked personality. It lacked character. It just seemed like a bunch, like a variation, a mishmash of shit I've already seen.
I wonder if this is going to be the latest movie to have the John Carter of Mars effect. If you recall, John Carter came out several years back.
Oh my God, remember that?
And pretty much John Carter is, you know, was based on a book in the 1900, I think it was, that has since been aped repeatedly over the course of the past 100 years. And as a result, all the structure and, you know, structural integrity of that story is so well worn at this point that it's just boring. Yeah. And I wonder, this is based on a French graphic novel from the 70s. I wonder if this is kind of also falling victim to that same thing where it feels derivative, even though maybe in its time it wasn't as derivative.
Yeah. Yeah, it might just be too late to the dance at this point. Yeah, I don't know. That's just sort of my final thing. It looked, I guess, decent, but it was just a whole lot of, like, been there, done that. Like, oh, this looks like Phantom Menace. That looks like Avatar. That looks like Fifth Element. This all just looks kind of like, all right, thanks. See you later. Like, I don't know. Just I'll wait for trailer number two before I decide if this movie's on my radar at all.
Looks like it could be fun for me, though. Like, looking at it, and obviously there's not enough personality yet because it's just visuals. It literally is just visuals for the most part. Like,
yeah,
it seems like it could still be fun, but I'm wondering if, like, the leads are too wise-ass for me to take them seriously, because it seems like they could potentially be. But I do like Dane DeHaan. That's who that is, right? Dane DeHaan?
Yep.
He's a great actor. I'm still not sure how I feel about Cara Delevingne, and you know, she's had kind of a hit or miss. I think she was good, and
she's only done like two movies.
Yeah, and she was the worst part about Suicide Squad. But I'm not entirely sure how much of it was her fault, or if it was just bad directing, or a bad script, or both, or maybe a mix of everything. So I'm willing to give her a few other shots. You know, we'll see how her career blossoms at this point. But you know, I'm willing to give her a shot, but I'm not thrilled.
That's another area, though, too, since you mentioned the leads. I don't know. To me, they're just a little too vanilla. I don't know. Neither one of them really does much for me. So, I don't know. And I don't mean that vanilla in terms of, like, you know, because they're white and Caucasian. You know, I don't care about that. Just something about them, looking at them, and just what I saw in this trailer, I'm like, I don't care about either of you. Just go somewhere else.
Kelvin?
I think Kelvin died. Let's move on.
Okay, moving on from there, we also got to see The Beauty and
the Beast. No, I'm back.
Kelvin. Oh, okay.
I'm back.
What did you think of the trailer, Kelvin?
Well, the one that Luc Besson won?
Yeah.
Yeah, he already tried this.
I already said it. I thought it felt like watching The Fifth Element.
Oh yeah,
I'm not really into.
Listen, you don't have to repeat yourself just because this pothead can't keep up with you. So, Jammer, keep going.
Keep going, Jim.
We got to see Beauty and the Beast trailer finally after all of these months, and the internet kind of went nuts. Everyone seemed to really like it, but I want to hear what Mario has to say about it. Mario.
Hey, Mario. Go ahead, Mario.
Jammer, you got to bug up your ass when it comes to me and, like, cartoons and cartoon adaptations. let's see. Beauty and the Beast. What did I think? I thought it actually looked surprisingly good. I would honestly say it's the first of these live action adaptations of classic fairy tales or classic Disney cartoons that actually has me intrigued. The directing of it and the cinematography seems very impressive. I love the cast. Anytime I get to see Kevin Kline in a movie, I'm very excited. And in general, the whole supporting cast is crazy with Ewan McGregor and Ian McKellen and all that shit. So I'm extremely interested in this. It's the first time I can say that. None of these other ones, not Cinderella, not the Snow White and the Kingsman, not Mirror Mirror, like none of these, Maleficent, fuck that noise. Like I haven't cared about any of these. But Beauty and the Beast is the first one I've seen trailer-wise where I'm like, shit, I will see that with my daughter and not begrudgingly.
Kelvin.
Wow. Wow. Mario. No, but I'm finding that, you know, I saw it. I liked it. I was intrigued also. But I think for me, I was more intrigued with Jungle Book when I saw that.
Mm, yeah.
I did like, I liked the setting. The set designs look fucking gorgeous. Disney magical, of course, you know. Gaston, he's my favorite right now in the whole trailer.
Oh, yeah, you like Luke Evans, huh?
But I have to question the CGI, though, a little bit on the Beast. What do you got? What did you guys think about the CGI? Because in the animation, his horns were different. And in this one, they're the other way around.
What does that mean?
Like the way they're facing. Like
the way they're facing.
They were more like devil-like in the cartoon, and now their horns are facing backwards.
Backwards, yeah.
I mean, in general, yeah. Are you talking about like the overall design of the Beast or the quality of the CG?
The quality of the CG.
I mean, the quality of the CG didn't really jump out at me. I think that when they showed that 1 second glimpse of the final battle where he's hanging over the side of the castle, that looked a little cartoonish to me. But overall, I thought it looked pretty good. And the movie's still several months off, so they have time to sort of refine that. There was really nothing about the CG that particularly worried me. You know, the candelabra and all those other, you know, the notable characters. They looked fairly photorealistic to me, and the Beast looks overall fairly photorealistic to me. So no, I'm not really worried about the effects.
And Emma Watson was pretty good. She even sounded a sort of like Belle.
Yeah, no, I've always been a big Emma Watson fan. I'll be glad to see her. Not like that, you skeevy fuck. No, it's exactly like that. But listen, I'll be happy to see her back in a movie again and stuff.
Well, I'm going to be the stick in the mud here.
Oh, shit.
I did not care for this trailer very much. And here's the thing. At the end of the day, am I going to see it? Yes, I'm definitely going to see this movie. So we'll get that out of the way. I guess it hooked me enough to sort of want to see it. The cast is good enough. The talent is good enough that I'll definitely be there to see it. Disney's track record has been solid. So I really have no reason to doubt that it'll be good. I just don't really dig the way it looks. I'm like, why bother? Or the structure of the story seems to be identical to the original. And it's almost like, why bother making this at all? This looks like everyone's running around in cosplay to look like the characters in the animation. This looks like the story is exactly the same with very little changes. I'm like, I don't understand why this had to be made other than money. Yes, a lot of talent's being thrown in there, but I'm finding myself a bit cynical about this one, thinking I don't know why this movie was made. I don't see any reason why.
Well, I can actually agree there. I can agree there. It did seem a little bit like...
They're phoning it in almost.
Yeah, like it's like, all right, here's the animated movie, but with actors in costumes instead of animated. I did get that sense, but for some reason, where you and I diverge was that it still looked good enough for me to want to check out in live action.
Which I, you know, like I said, I'm going to see it, so I'm hypocritical, I guess. But it's just I wish it took bigger risks other than replicating what we've already seen. If I
Well, who knows, though? Because this is only the first trailer. You know, they might want it to seem very familiar because there's such a huge installed fan base of people who grew up with that movie that maybe the first trailer – yeah, and this is just devil's advocate. Who knows? But maybe when they were editing it, they were like, let's bring back all these iconic things that the fan base is obsessed with so they can get those little goosebumps. And then they're going to save the stuff that's more, you know, interesting and original for trailer two. Because we already know there's going to be new songs. And you've got to imagine that there's got to be more to this than just adapting the cartoon into a movie.
I hope so. But by that same token, Cinderella is a movie that I felt the same exact way about. Like, I was like, why is this movie being made? I don't understand. It looks like it's exactly the same. I saw the movie. Yes, it was pretty much exactly the same, but it was done really well, and at the end of the day, I thought it was a great movie. So, double-edged sword, I guess, that, like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to do anything new in order to be genuinely good.
Yeah. That's true, too. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily reinvent the story to be good.
Yeah. I mean, Kelvin, do you have any thoughts on that at all?
No, I mean, like I said, I'm definitely going to go see it no matter what. It is the first teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I like the setting, set designs look gorgeous, like I said, and the whole opening of the trailer looked dark and stuff like that. So, you know,
yeah, it was pretty fucking scary. I mean, yeah. I like that.
Let's see what happens on the next trailer or whatnot, see if it sells you more. I mean, it sort of reminded me of that Angelina Jolie film in the beginning.
Yeah.
Maleficent?
Maleficent. Even though a lot of people didn't like it.
Maleficent piece of shit.
Whoa. There are children
listening to this goddamn motherfucking podcast.
There better not be. Jesus fucking Christ.
Anyway.
No, but let's see what happens. You know, this is just the first trailer and stuff like that.
I mean, I have no doubt that the movie will be good. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a great movie. I'm just a bit disappointed they didn't take more risks with it.
And what can Disney go wrong, you know? Disney's been doing.
Oh, and I will say, too, it reconnected me with, like, my childhood to a degree. Mind you, I should say I've only ever seen the original, like, from start to finish once.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
And it was in theaters when it came out. I just, listen, man, I turned 10 and I said, fuck cartoons. That's just what happened.
No, I mean, I saw the original. I saw the original, got nominated for an Oscar, and then I saw I don't know if you saw this, Mario, the Broadway play. That was good, too.
I saw it on ice.
Were you holding mommy's hand and waving a glow sword?
Shit, yeah, I was.
What I was going to say, though, is it did reconnect me to my childhood a little bit. Because I remember, like, when I saw it, let's see, when the first one came out, what, like 91? So I was like 8. When I saw Beauty and the Beast.
I think it was 93.
93, all right, so I was 10. So that might have been my last one. But anyway, when I saw it, when I was 10, I remember, like, thinking the Beast was badass.
Oh, you're right. Like, it was 91. You're right.
I remember thinking, like, you know, it was like this roaring monster type. I was always obsessed with werewolves and the idea of, like, a half man, half monster thing. I always loved that. And seeing it in live action in that opening sequence where you hear the roar and the whole thing, it reminded me of that feeling of, like, oh, dude, I want to see the Beast fucking rip ass right now. That
really?
Sounds like I'm at. Yeah. I want to see him fart. I want to see him break wind. No, you know what I mean? I want to see the Beast fucking rip someone apart. That's what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
So the opening of the trailer sort of reconnected me to that feeling. And no, I do not want a flatulent Beast. A
flatulent Beast. Yeah, I mean, I think we'll all have our eyes open on this one and fingers crossed that it's a good one. But I don't think any of us are really worried that it's going to be bad. So
I'm sorry. I can't believe I said I want to see the Beast. I'm enjoying that
was
too
awesome.
Much. That's it. When I see that movie, I'm going to tweet the Beast ripped ass.
That's still going to be the quote.
Yeah. Mario Robles, Latino Review raves, the Beast ripped ass.
Okay, so moving on from one childhood memory to another, kind of. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This is the upcoming prequel, I guess, quote-unquote prequel series for Harry Potter that is being directed by longtime Harry Potter director David Yates and author J.K. Rowling, or she's screenwriting the script for the first one. And for the longest time, we weren't really sure whether or not, you know, Yates would be back to direct the whole thing. And we didn't... What are you doing?
Sorry, I'm just having fun.
Okay. And we didn't know whether or not J.K. Rowling would be back to pen the remaining four. First of all, it sounds like Rowling has already completed a draft of the second script and is putting finishing touches on the second film already, which is good news, and that she plans on coming back for the rest of them. In addition, Yates also sounds like he's coming back to direct all the other four Fantastic Beast movies. Mario, any thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, this circles us back to something we discussed. It was either last week or the week before. I said, you know, when they initially announced it would be five movies, what did I say? I said, as long as Rowling's involved, then I'm in. If she's not, then I'm extremely skeptical. But there we go. She's in, so I'm fucking in. And David Yates is doing the next five, and I really like what he did with the Potter movies. I thought he found a nice, happy medium between what Chris Columbus did and what Cuarón did, and he found that nice tone in between where, like, it did appeal to everyone, but it was also sort of dark and interesting. So I'm in. I like Yates in this magical wizarding world of Harry Potter, and I love J.K. Rowling, so this could not be better news for me.
I think this will definitely give us some consistency that was much needed and we were not given in the Harry Potter series. Like, I'll never forget, you know, those first couple movies as a kid, they were fine. And, you know, they had their own style. But then Cuarón came in, threw a wrench in the whole thing, redesigned all of Hogwarts, redesigned, like, changed the way the kids dressed, changed the way the entire culture felt. Yeah. And then it was just, like, everything, like, Hogwarts slowly transformed over the course of the next few movies, and it became, like, a completely different place. And I was always annoyed, you know, that happened. If you look at Professor Flitwick, he looks completely different in movie 1 to movie 7. If you look at just everything, like, everything constantly changes and nothing is consistent, and the OCD person in me fucking hates that. And so the fact that we're going to get a consistent style and tone for this series is, you know, a much needed breath of fresh air. Kelvin, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, look, I've seen the movie twice already. So
look at you.
This movie is not for it is for the Harry Potter fans, but it's not like based on a book, you know, and so you can go and bitch about it and say, oh, this book had this, the book had that. It's not a kid, how the other films were, you know, targeted for kids. This one is more for adults and for Potter fans who were kids back then. But for me, it's Yates, I think, and I told him this myself, I think it's Yates' best work so far, you know?
Wow.
It's his best work so far. And towards the end of the film, you can see where they're going, what direction they're going.
Mm-hmm.
It brings a lot of homage to the Harry Potter films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, oh, that was in Harry Potter. Oh, that was in Harry Potter. So this woman's, J.K. Rowling's mind is incredible, you know, and I hope she does the remaining four films.
Yeah. You know?
Well, it sounds like she is, homie.
Yeah, and at least we know she at least has written a script for the second one, so that's already good news.
And what I'm really looking forward to on the sequel for this is Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
he's been confirmed to be in the film.
And I couldn't say anything because of what happened towards the end of the film, but I really want to see what he does to that character that he brought to the movie.
Cool.
Now, what do you think of the rumors that Dumbledore is going to be in love with Johnny Depp's character?
I think it's kind of...
I don't care, to be honest with you, as long as it's a good motherfucking story.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of...
Well, I don't care either.
It may be a bit necessary, because the whole idea is that was the guy that Dumbledore was actually in love with. And if it's a story about their relationship, it's like, I feel like it's kind of unavoidable to at least address on some level. So
yeah,
it has to be done. Yeah. But I have a question for you guys. David Uh-oh. Yates directed 4 Harry Potter films, Order of the Phoenix all the way through Deathly Hallows Part 2. What was your favorite Harry Potter film that he directed? Should I start?
Yeah, you start, since I think you have an answer already.
I think my favorite one was what's it called? Oh, I forgot the name. The Half-Blood Prince. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah,
that's the one that I like. Was my least favorite book, and it was my favorite of all of the movies, period. And the reason why I really liked it is I really appreciated its dark and sort of melancholy tone. And it was interesting because it felt like a series of vignettes. It felt most like the books than any of them, in my opinion, because like it was just like it was a series of scenes with sort of loose connective tissue that sort of culminated in a big fight sequence at the end of the film. And just I feel like the stakes were really high, and just the way it was shot was beautiful. And I don't know, it was like the perfect merger of everything that came before it. And as great as the next two were, I think that one managed to bring it along in a more emotionally satisfying and quick-paced manner that was lost in the next two movies.
Honestly, for me, it's weird. Like, this is going to sound like I'm showering Yates with faint praise, but I think this is ultimately a positive remark. For me, once he took over, all those movies sort of merged into one long movie for me. Especially because I haven't necessarily repeated any of them. You know, I saw them all in theaters. I really enjoyed them, and then I moved on. I'm sure if I sat down and watched them all again, I might have more specific critiques or insights on each movie. But for me, once we got into that final leg of the Harry Potter saga, where Yates basically did all of the final, like, five movies, whatever it ended up being, to me, all those just seem like one long movie. So it's hard for me to say which one I liked the most or even the least, because when I think about them, I almost don't remember which one was which.
Yeah. What about you, Kelvin?
No, I agree with you on the Blood Prince. That was my favorite out of the Yates films that he directed. Then I think it would be Deathly Hallows Part 2, because I didn't really like Part 1. Mm. And then, obviously, for me, the number one movie that he's done so far is this one, Fantastic Beasts.
Okay. You know?
Yeah, I really liked the movies he did, but I was kind of annoyed that he felt compelled to throw an annoying filter over the visuals in the later ones. And I feel like he's pulled back on that with Fantastic Beasts based on what I've seen so far. So that makes me happy.
And Fantastic Beasts has a lot of more action than any other Potter films that he's done before, you know. Mm-hmm. More than usual.
Yeah, it looked like it for sure. Just based on the trailers, like, it almost seems to have, like, it almost looks like a comic book movie where, like, at the end we get to watch our hero fend off against a giant bad guy.
And everybody was clapping when I went to see the film twice. Both times, there was a Central Park scene that everyone clapped when they finished, and there was another one, and towards the end of the film where everyone fucking just clapped. You know what I mean? And of course. The big revelation when Johnny Depp is involved. Everyone went fucking apeshit. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Well, this movie seems to be doing pretty well so far, at least on Rotten Tomatoes. There have been 31 reviews counted, and of those, 29 are fresh, and it's at a 94% as of right now, which is a pretty auspicious start. So I guess when all said and done, I'm assuming low 90s, high 80s. But it seems to be a winner, and actually potentially the biggest winner of any Harry Potter film to date as far as critical reception. So,
all right, Jammer, I got to step out, so I'll leave you guys from here.
Sounds good.
All right.
So on that note, do you just want to talk about what we've been watching at all, or if anything that you've managed to check out, either movie or TV, this past week?
I am still on the same shit, so I'm not very fun or
I'll say something real quick. Wait. I binged, and I am happy to say, fuck it. The Crown. That shit was good on Netflix. That shit was good.
All right. That
shit was good. Interesting. You learned some shit that you never thought of. I'm like, what? There was this big, dense fog in London in 1952 that killed 4,000 people, and then at the end, and then they're killing 12,000 people. I was like, what the
fuck? Did it fucking eat them?
Well, I don't know what it was, but it killed all the motherfuckers.
Dude, we gotta get Kelvin on the poster for The Crown. Just transplant,
like fucking Biggie Smalls' crown.
Jesus Christ!
All right, guys, I gotta go.
All right, take it easy. Well, speaking of Biggie, Biggie crown. Like, I've been watching Luke Cage, and I'm about 11. I finished episode 11, and man,
I'm up to 7. So don't spoil anything.
You're up
for
to 7.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you got some surprises down the line.
I just saw the one where they arrested Cottonmouth, and it almost seems like they're wrapping it up, because at the end, Claire Temple, Rosario Dawson, is asking him, like, you know, so what are you going to do now that you've vanquished him? So I'm like, what are they wrapping this up? I had to, like, check the episode count. Like, is this over?
You got so some big surprises. Curious. Big surprises are in store for you. Like, damn. Like, in the episodes to follow, holy shit. And one thing I think that is worth mentioning, I'm not going to necessarily spoil, but Luke Cage, he gets hurt in this first season. And one of my biggest criticisms of, like, the DCCW shows is the fucking faux science is ridiculous and silly. Which is, you know, it could be a good thing. Like, it's fun to watch. Like, it distracts me, but at the end of the day, the characters I like enough to, like, let it go. But in this show, the faux science they have here, that shit is real. Like, the faux science they have is awesome and believable, and things take a decent amount of effort to do, whereas, you know, oh, this, as opposed to like in The Flash, where, oh, this thing that should, you know, probably take hundreds and hundreds of man hours and billions of dollars to make, I could just create that in, you know, 3 minutes of an episode. Sure, we'll do that. So that aspect has always bothered me, and that is not at all present in Luke Cage. Netflix, you have your faux science down, and the amount of work it takes to help Luke Cage when he gets hurt, so good. It is riveting. And I think this might be my favorite Netflix Marvel show so far.
Wow.
But we'll see how it wraps up. We'll see how it wraps up.
Yeah. Well, I definitely have that feeling, like I shared a few weeks back, and it's still true that I'm really into everything on the show, even like the Misty Knight subplot. Like, you know, I can't say that about the other Marvel Netflix shows. Typically, there's always like, I don't care about this. Can we please get back to Daredevil? Can we please get back to Jessica Jones? Like, the subplots have not necessarily interested me. On Luke Cage, I'm very much locked into all the characters and the whole world they're creating there. So I got to hand it to the writers for that.
Yeah, they did.
I almost feel like Misty Knight could have her own show. She's so good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's probably going to become more important as time goes on. So maybe that'd be pretty awesome. Yeah. Last thing I'm going to say. American Horror Story. It continues.
I'm not caught up.
It continues to amaze, and I'm really anxious to see how tomorrow's episode goes and how it wraps up the entire season. So it's maintained its momentum very well. I was really worried, considering how slow the first half of the season was, that it would slow down. It does not. It does not slow down.
Color me intrigued. Yeah, I'm 1 week behind. I'm going to hopefully catch up tonight.
Cool, cool. Well, that's all I have to say about some stuff I've been watching. I already talked about Trolls and Hacksaw Ridge a bit. Designated Survivor. We'll see how that show pans out. It's kind of slowing down a bit. Supergirl actually had an uptick in quality this week compared to previous week, which is great. That's all I have to say. Any last words?
I'm still just watching Luke Cage, Westworld, American Horror Story, and that's about it. So, yeah. I haven't gotten to the movies, but that will change this weekend. I plan on catching Fantastic Beasts. But let's go ahead and bring this one home. So everyone, thank you for joining us for this 38th edition of Los Fanboys, the official movie and TV podcast of Latino Review Media, a.k.a. LRM Online. I'm sure Calvin would send you his warmest, most heart-filled adieu if he were here right now. But I will do it on his behalf. Goodbye, bitches. And we'll see you next week.
Later.
Oh, wait. Whoa. Question of the week.
Whoa, fuck my life. Yes.
Question of the fucking week, Jammer.
Oh, shit. What is the question of the week? How about this? What were your thoughts on... I don't know. I got nothing. I was trying to stall right now because I'm torn between talking about Valerian or Beauty and the Beast or Ghost in the Shell. Mario, what do you think?
Let's go with Beauty and the Beast. I want to know your official response. Do you guys want to see that movie now that you've seen the trailer? Are you excited? How does it rank amongst all of these other fucking live-action adaptations of fucking kid cartoons?
Do you think it looks like fucking cosplay like I do? And are you, like, disappointed they don't take more chances?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. How's that for an 18-part question of the week?
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, guys. Thank you. Thanks for humoring us. You guys are so patient and wonderful. Mm-hmm. We love you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.